Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
This is Auburn football, okay? It's the best part of it. The place is rich. It's resourced. It has unbelievable passion. It's also impulsive, divided, and prone to self-sabotage.
SI's Ross Dellinger.
I just don't think people understand how difficult it can be living and working and trying to compete in Mississippi with others that are not in Mississippi.
And SI's Pat Forty.
And even the ones that are like, well, it's not to excuse what Michigan State did, but I'm going to expend a lot of heat and air right now telling you how terrible Michigan is. Be quiet. Say, look, I love my team, I love my school, but we're in the wrong here, okay?
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, emergency pod edition.
Oh, yeah.
We got escalating tensions even after the fight in the state of Michigan. We've got Auburn firing a coach. It's a biannual tradition.
On the same day they hired an AD.
And they hired an AD. And we've got other stuff. We have too much. We've got the first playoff rankings called tomorrow night. So we're going to tape another pod after tomorrow night to talk about that. We have this massive weekend of games, including LSU, Alabama, and Georgia, Tennessee, which is the colossal, you know, somebody's getting the inside track on a playoff bid, among other things. So we got all sorts of stuff. So even here on a holiday night, we said that we got to do it.
Yeah.
All Hallows Eve.
Not All Hallows Eve. Happy Pole Assassin Day.
Is that right? Pole Assassin.
Stripper Monkey Day. Stripper Monkey Day. Yeah.
It is Happy Pole. If you recall,
yes.
Danielle yes. Thomas, a.k.a. the Pole Assassin, during the entertaining days of her career. Was dating a University of Texas assistant coach, Jeff Banks. And last year threw a Halloween party in the neighborhood where a young neighborhood party goer wandered into the back of their house, saw some cages, stuck his hand in the cage and got bit by her emotional support monkey.
/ stripper pole colleague. Co-star.
That's right. Was occasionally used in the performances.
Yeah.
Oof. It's a normal Halloween incident, right? Bit by a caged monkey that belonged to a stripper who was dating a football coach. All right.
Yeah. Remember when this started to hit last year and we're like, come on, this can't be real. It's like, I don't know, it was like Bro Bible or something was putting it out. And then all of a sudden, the pole assassin herself basically confirmed the whole story. And we're like, yes, podcast gold.
It absolutely, yeah. And she blamed the kid because the kid wandered off. I mean, kind of, but yeah. So happy Pole Assassin Day. Also Halloween.
To all who celebrate the Pole Assassin Day.
Pole Assassin Day is here.
How would you celebrate a Pole Assassin Day? You know what? Let's not go there.
Well, I have some ideas, yeah. But let's get to the fight. Yeah. Before we get fired on an emergency. It's like getting fired on your day off, right? Like Friday.
Right. We're doing extra work here.
Yeah. I don't need to do that. So hope everyone's fine. Hope that young fella has recovered from the incident. All right. The brawl in the big house, if it's even a brawl. Sort of, I mean, I can't say it escalated because I don't believe anyone was injured on Monday, but we had dueling press conferences, a half hour and 65 miles apart. Jim Harbaugh comes in strong, claiming what happened in the tunnel was egregious, sickening to watch. He claims he has a better view from the ABC telecam. It's on a higher elevation. Now, that does not appear to be the actual ABC film. I don't know. We have not seen the higher elevation video that Harbaugh has seen. I believe that there is surveillance video from above each locker room.
Right.
And Harbaugh was confused because ABC, I think, released its video and you can't see anything or much. But he declared it sickening to watch. There needs to be accountability, full, thorough, timely investigation. And a couple of the big quotes. I can't imagine this will not result in criminal charges.
Yeah.
Wow. The videos are bad. It's clear what transpired. It's open and shut. As they say, watch the tape. Mel Tucker did come out. He apologized. He's yet to throw up any kind of real defense. And then he had a line where he just kept basically saying, out of respect for the integrity of the investigation, it would be irresponsible for me to comment. Now, I think he was just saying that. I don't think he was directing it and suggesting that Harbaugh was irresponsible to comment. But he could have. He could have. Then we have this whole bit where MSU fans and kind of their partisan media are blaming Harbaugh for all of this because the rivalry has gotten amped up under him. And Michigan players are talking a lot of smack and all of that. Mm-hmm. So we can discuss that.
Yeah. By all means, you should hit him in the face with a helmet if they talk smack to you.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of whataboutism. But we'll get to that.
Yeah.
And then Gamont Green, who was the one who there's blurry video, background video of him getting hit with someone swinging an unidentified Michigan State player swinging a helmet at him. And he is not wearing a helmet. He is apparently the one who was first involved in this. He hired noted attorney Tom Mars, who finds his way into all sorts of mischief in college athletics, including uncovering Hugh Freeze dialing up a, a pole assassins of his own, if you will.
A career assassin, I think.
A career assassin.
Yeah.
Tom Mars, you're always good when Tom's involved. I saw that. I was pretty happy. Pat, you start with this. The Tom Mars' involvement and they're going to press charges, the Green family.
Yeah. I reported that Monday afternoon. And Michigan State fans were fond of saying, Tuck coming. We got bad news for Michigan State. Mars coming. When he's involved, things get heated. Things get very brass knuckles tough, I think you could say. Ask the University of Mississippi about dealing with him. Ask the University of Georgia. He was involved in Justin Fields' transfer. You can ask a lot of people about their activity with Tom Mars. As you said, he finds his way into different shenanigans, and he is a blunt force guy. And he had a blunt force statement that he gave me regarding this. He said, when college football players brutally attack a member of the opposing team with their helmets, resulting in the player suffering a concussion and other injuries, an apology won't suffice. There has to be severe consequences for this kind of misconduct. Not only does Jamon Green deserve to be compensated for his injuries, severe consequences in this case will deter others who might think they can get away with brutally beating an opposing player and only get a slap on the wrist. I've got news for the MSU players who did this to Jamon. They are going to feel the full wrath of the law.
Ooh,
oh boy.
There you have it.
It sounds like a lawyer wrote that, Pat.
It does. It does. A great saber-rattling lawyer.
That is.
He is that. He's like the F around and find out guy.
Yeah.
As Ole Miss and Hugh Freeze did.
Yep.
And he wound up at Liberty.
Yeah.
That's what happened. So, yeah, that's some bold talk. Ross, what do you think?
Yeah, big time. And obviously, you guys might know this more than me, but there has been, you know, criminal charges against players associated with stuff around a game before. And I feel like a lot of times players get out of it because it's something, you know, on the field of play or, you know, the arena of the game. But this was obviously off the field completely in a tunnel. And so you got to wonder if, like, finally we might actually have some serious criminal, you know, consequences for the actions. The fact that it was on video, I think this morning, I want to say, a new ESPN video footage kind of came out where you could see, you know, a Michigan player, a Michigan State player just swinging a helmet down right into the head or face of this kid. And that's pretty good evidence, I'd say.
Well, yeah. And so, you know, I think the tack these guys took today, Harbaugh is suggesting he has seen a video, and it undoubtedly exists. I mean, I'd be stunned if there's not very clear video from security and surveillance in the Lloyd Carr tunnel there. And there's also other people who are filming stuff. We've only seen two cell phone videos and then this ESPN one. We haven't, you know, seen that many, but there's obviously more. I mean, unless Harbaugh is it defies logic that Harbaugh would come out that strong and say that, you know, watch the tape. If there isn't, this is even more damning what you're going to eventually see on these tapes. I mean, I suppose he could be, but why would you, if he's watched it and like, oh, wasn't that bad, nobody really got hit, or one of his players was, you know, threw the first punch or something like that, I'm guessing he doesn't come out as strong as he does today. Yeah. And conversely, MSU, which I would hope has seen something or been shared or also has investigated this, and they've certainly, I mean, we're talking 48 hours later now, we're doing this, wouldn't take the posture of, we can't discuss an ongoing investigation. I mean, yeah, the police are kind of, it's also like a Big Ten investigation. Is that like really an investigation? Like this is right. This is not the FBI saying don't talk. You don't have a judge gag order on this. MSU's getting raked over the PR coals. If they had anything that could defend their players or their program and they didn't come out and do it right now, then it would be public relations malfeasance. And there are a lot of smart people in the MSU athletic department that are not going to fall for that.
Right.
And I'm sure they've probably hired a crisis man. I mean, it's just not. So, you know, one of the things with all these stories is you always have to be careful when you're in a position like we are, where you have to try to write or comment on something. It's just not all the facts are in, but you can't just sit there and be like, yeah, we'll only write about it when the facts are in. Like there's immense public interest in this.
Right.
So this is the job. But at this point, I'd be stunned if this is going to flip in any way and be like, aha, the MSU guys are innocent. Yeah. And it was really the Michigan guys. Right. So that to me is pretty damning. And then, you know, what Mars is saying, I mean, I don't know. Does he, obviously they press criminal charges. The Ann Arbor police are involved. I'm guessing a Washtenaw County prosecutor could be fairly popular prosecuting Michigan State football players, right? I mean, that's not, and it looked like we said it the other day, it was like a street fight. That wasn't even when they're on the field, it's like, well, you can run away.
Yeah.
This was, you know, what are you doing?
By no means a fair fight of any kind.
Yeah. So I wonder if there's, you know, does Mars sue Michigan State? Does he sue the, you know, I don't know. I mean, again, I don't want him messing around with me. I don't know what they do, but where does this go? Go on all that.
Yeah. My sense, and this is mostly conjecture, but is one reason like the Big Ten hasn't done anything yet or said anything other than an initial statement of, yeah, we're aware. And Michigan State kind of left things open-ended. Is I think they're waiting to see if there's going to be criminal charges here. It's like Michigan State probably stepped in, suspended the four guys Sunday night because it was very clear that they were in the most trouble. They were the most clearly wrong. And you could make that easy move and, you know, say that you're proactive here, you're doing something. But they didn't announce a length of suspension. They didn't know, you know, they said other things could still happen. And my sense is they are waiting. Everybody's kind of waiting to see, okay, what's the legal ramifications here? What's the criminal ramifications? And then we will go from there, because it's unusual, as you said, Dan, 48 hours later, like for the Big Ten to not have uttered a peep to me says that they're just kind of waiting for somebody else to utter some peeps first.
Yeah, we were waiting all evening. You know, it was like something going to come out, something going, nothing here. I agree. It's, you know, and do the suspensions move on to more people? I would say those four, their future in East Lansing is pretty dire. But I don't even think you're going to get a whole lot of Michigan State fans or anyone at Michigan State who's going to say, look, if you are hitting someone with a helmet and you get an assault and battery charge, I mean, it's just so beyond the pale of it and not in the play of action. So this is going to get interesting. There's going to be a lot more to go. And I think that's why MSU is holding its fire. And I'm not one of these people like, you must, why haven't they thrown these kids out of school? Like, you got to let a process play out and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, there's a lot that still needs to be discovered, unfolded, whatever. I mean, I'm sure people are looking at all that behind the scenes. My guess too is both schools who have plenty of people friendly to the universities who are in legal, either in law enforcement or the law, lawyers, who they brought in and say, hey, look, this is all the tape we've got. Look at this. How much trouble are we in if you're Michigan State? Or if you're Michigan, how much trouble are they in and how much we press the issue here? So I'm sure both sides have had plenty of input from people who know how to handle their way around possible, you know, aggravated assault.
On a scale of Juwan Howard, how big of a hit is this?
We're a lot over Juwan Howard. The only difference there is that he was a multi-million dollar coach doing the swinging. But
yeah. Michigan fans are just irate that someone would hit somebody else.
Yeah. Oh, there's this is like my Twitter mentions are an absolute forest fire of bickering. Tell me about it. At this point. Yeah.
Usually
they got a point on that one. MSU fan has a point on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But not really what happened in the tunnel. That's the thing. Yeah. Not related. But no. Yeah, not so good.
It's not related.
Yeah, it is. It's yeah. The rivalry has gone extreme toxicity at this point, and they got to figure out how to dial it down a little bit. That's not a blame one side or the other, or I'm not blaming both sides because this escalated dramatically because of these four guys.
Right.
And maybe more. But the fact is it happened, and I don't know what you got to do, but they need to dial this down a little bit because I live in the state of Michigan. I didn't go to Michigan. I didn't go to Michigan State. I'm not a Michigan State fan. I'm not a Michigan fan. I don't really care. I root for both of them if they're doing well or covering the game. I don't care. I pretty much could see, you know, how this is, but my experience with most people living in Michigan is, I mean, it's like one kid goes to Michigan State, one goes to Michigan, and one friend is from Michigan. Like, there's a rivalry, but like, there's not the gunplay level rivalry amongst the fans, at least most of them. You know, it's just sort of like this has gotten well beyond what most people. You know, it just doesn't make any sense that it should get to this level, and it has. So there shouldn't be fights. This is embarrassing for Michigan State, but it's just you know, Michigan and both of the teams could do something good to try to figure out how to dampen this down because this is getting nobody really wants to see a kid who's playing college football wind up in jail.
No.
Right. No. Like there's nothing good going on here.
No. Yeah. But we all you'd also don't want to see kids getting concussions from being hit in the head with somebody else.
You just don't want to see this whole thing. So
consequences of some kind. But yeah, you don't you don't want to see a 19, 20 year old go to prison, get kicked off a team and go to prison and career over, you know.
Yeah, career's over, they're thrown out of school, they lose their scholarship, and yeah, they're gonna end up on like Last Chance U getting screamed at by like Jason Brown. All right, so let me hear your take on the Michigan State fan pushback. Now, this is not the school; they're not even trying to trot this out.
Right,
but it's all Harbaugh's fault.
Oh yeah,
The building's very old, but there were not these fights in the tunnel until Harbaugh came along. Now there's the peanut butter and jelly gate with Penn State. There was an incident last year at half or before the game, a lot of John with Ohio State. And now there's this one, and the belief is Harbaugh lets his players talk unbelievable amounts of smack. J.J. McCarthy's talking about running up the score, and there's always this stuff going on. You know, Blake Corum walks in after the game and just mocks Mel Tucker and the whole Tuck coming line. He said, all I saw was Tuck running.
Yeah.
You know, should a player make fun of a coach? You know, you all know my stance on sportsmanship, but other people have different opinions. I was amused.
You want to abolish sportsmanship.
I don't believe really that much in sportsmanship, but I don't have a problem with it. Tuck's making $95 million, smoking big cigars, and they're selling Tuck coming t-shirts. Hey, you say Tuck running, it's kind of funny. But other people, well, that's not the way we do things. But there is a whole bit. This is Michigan's problem. This is Michigan State doesn't want to elevate it. Michigan State wins the game last year. You don't see any issues. They know how to celebrate amongst themselves. They were leaving as they were supposed to, and these two players of Michigan went into the – they were supposed to wait, and they didn't. They just left too early, and they got in the middle there. Ross, can you blame Michigan in this? Because there's a lot of people here blaming Michigan.
I don't think you can blame Michigan for having players to talk so much smack that it required a helmet being swung at a helmetless player. I don't. That doesn't jive at all.
Bridge too far.
You know, isn't football and sports in general supposed to be kind of fun, and you know you're gonna let your players kind of celebrate a win and kind of chill a little bit, not be so uptight about things. I mean, it's supposed to be fun, and part of being 18, 19, 20 year old is talking the old smack and all that. And I think that's fine. And you can't convince me that if they didn't do all that, that this would have happened anyway or whatever. It just doesn't make any sense. And I didn't even see all that, Dan. I guess this was pushed out by some Michigan State fans or something, but it seems crazy.
Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff being pushed out by some segment of the Michigan State fans. I mean, it's that. Yeah. I mean, people are still, they want to blame the tunnel. They want to blame Harbaugh. They want to blame those two guys for running in there. And even the ones that are like, well, it's not to excuse what Michigan State did, but I'm going to expend a lot of heat and air right now telling you how terrible exactly. Michigan is. Like, just be quiet. Say, look, I love my team. I love my school, but we're in the wrong here. Okay. And end of discussion. Stop. You're done there. Now. Yeah. Okay. Does Harbaugh and his team maybe have a way of irritating people? Yeah. Okay. There's one way to do something about it. It's not to assault them in the tunnel. Yeah. It's to beat them on the field.
Right.
As Ohio State has done a lot. You know, if you don't like it, do something about it on the field. I do think
MSU's done it pretty good.
Oh, they have. They have. They beat them in 2020 and 2021 with Tuck.
I think they won 10 of 15 or something. Yeah. They won a bunch of these.
But. Yeah. You know, to me, the best thing about winning is not saying, ha ha, eat it, to the team you beat. It's like, hey, we just did something good. So I'm not really down with the, you know, let's make the other team look bad. Like, let's just be happy that we won. If somebody wants to talk smack to you, point at the scoreboard, say, there's the score. We'll see you next year.
Yeah. I mean, ideally, you grab the Paul Bunyan Trophy, you run over to the student section, and it's all good.
Yeah.
So, but if a college player goes for 177 yards and avenges a touchdown and avenges a bitter defeat from the year before and kind of makes fun of a dude who cashed in $95 million off that game,
totally fine with that.
There's bigger victims out there.
Yeah, and they, I mean, this hasn't been like a subtle thing that Mel Tucker and Michigan State have done. It's like, it's been a campaign, right? The Tuck coming, like, it's a campaign that we've seen. So if you're going to do that, you know, you got to expect, like, there's going to be, especially when you lose, right? There's going to be a little backlash to that. And that's what we're seeing.
Yeah. I think like, you know, it's through the years, it's just gone back and forth, but like Mark D'Antonio used it as fire. Like, it was fuel.
Right. Right.
He hated Michigan.
Yes. Arrogance. He used that word a lot describing
pride comes before the fall. He made fun of Mike Hart's height. Mike Hart famously called him Little Brother, which is just drove the. I mean, it's pretty good. We had that the one a few years ago. I think it was 19 or 2018 when Michigan State walks across the field and there's a couple of Michigan players out there already warming up. They link arms,
and just basically kind of run them over. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. They ran them over, and then there was supposedly a scuffing of the
Devin
Spartan
Bush was
symbol.
Scuffing up the Devin Bush.
Oh yeah, yeah. The sacred symbol. I mean, it's comedy. My God, rivalry how self-important stuff. Can we be?
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, all of that was just stupid, and you either look like a fool or you don't. But it's not criminal, and it's not this. So
right, I don't know. Yeah. So
all right, we'll see. More to come.
More to come.
Unfortunately, none of the injuries appear to be too significant. I guess so far.
Yeah, we'll see. A concussion. Which you never know. But
yeah. But we'll see where we're at on that. Okay. From violence to money. Auburn. Fires Brian Hartson. He is 6-7 in his career. He is owed $15,575,000. He's getting $7.78 million within 30 days. And then he has four straight years of an annual payment of $1.94 million. Not bad.
No.
Good way to go.
Good way to go. Mm-mm. And now the Auburn job is free. Now, I tallied this up. December 13, 2020, they fired Gus Malzahn. They paid him $21.45 million. And they have to keep paying him the $22.68 million installments, even though he's got a new job. He's making $11.5 million over 5 years at UCF. I mean, Gus is rich.
A lot of Waffle House.
So it was $21.45 for Gus. The Opelika Auburn News said that the assistants that they had to fire and staffers of Gus Malzahn was about $7.15 million. You throw in this $15.575 million, and we're not even getting to the Auburn staffers who have been fired. We're at $44.2 million. Mm. We're probably headed to $50 million in the last 2 years in buyout money. Now,
War Eagle.
War Eagle. Like, I know you got the money and the boosters and all that, but $50 million to pay dudes not to work?
We got the money and we will show you, Dan. We will show you we got the money. That's right. Hey,
congrats. Giving dudes $50 million.
How much NIL could that be used for? How many players? Man.
That's what they need to be thinking about.
Man.
Yeah. The coaches, though, you know they're gonna complain. Mm-hmm. Well, it's just sad. These kids, these high school kids are making money, they didn't even earn it. This transfer portal. This is ridiculous. $50 million at one school to pay people not to work. But to me, this number is, this is Auburn football. Okay. It's the best part of it. The place is rich. It's resourced. It has unbelievable passion. It's also impulsive, divided, and prone to self-sabotage.
Mm. Yes.
This is the conundrum. They're giving out $50 million because they got sick of these coaches, yet they got the $50 million. So this is the place. It can win national championships or it can be absolutely ridiculous. What is going to be next? I don't know. They could literally be redoing this in 2 years and we go going for like $75 million or $100 million. Or they could be in the playoffs, like beating teams, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea.
Mm-hmm. It is quite the roller coaster. The last,
what do you think's next, Ross? What is this? Not just Auburn at its best and worst.
Yeah,
and
it really is
most telling.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said it right. It seems like every 5 years Auburn is a circus and it torpedoes itself in some way internally in the administration or boosters or board because of the involvement there from the outside entities and their power and authority. And then every 5 years, Auburn seems to be competing for a championship and going undefeated. It's amazing. And it probably shows that, you know, I hate to use a cliche here from old PJ Fleck, but if everybody gets rowing in the same direction, then maybe Auburn can more consistently compete for championships on the field and, you know, cut out the circus that seems to come to town every 3 to 5 years, going back a long, long time. But it's like the history there. It's like part of the fabric. It's like the fight song and the colors. It's like Auburn booster involvement, you know, board involvement. I mean, it's like part of it. And they claim that, you know, no longer, we're not going to do that, you know, but you just keep hearing that. Every new AD that's hired, every new coach that's hired, you hear the same thing. And, you know, I don't know that John Cohen and whoever they hire as football coach can go in there and all of a sudden things are going to be hunky-dory. You know, they got a new president. He's been in Auburn for like 30 years. He's got relationships with everybody there, the board and the boosters, I'm sure. I don't know if that's good or bad. I don't know. But I guess we'll find out soon enough, because within the next year, we might have, you know, some other implosion.
The thing I just like, this is so Auburn it hurts, the confluence of events here. I mean, first of all, like, all right, Brian Harsin's been a dead man walking since last winter, right? They tried to sabotage him then. They didn't have the goods. It was probably a pretty dirty deal where they were trying to, you know, smear him, and school investigated these rumors and then nothing happened. But I mean, his tenure was over then. It was just a matter of, as soon as he lost enough games, and he lost them fairly quickly this year. But then, all you know, then things kind of drag out. And it's like, oh no, we're going to keep him, because we also kneecapped our AD and we need to bring in a new AD. And so then, like, it all comes together today. It was over the course of the weekend, but today it becomes, you know, official that you're going to hire the Mississippi State AD, and it's, again, the SEC West, where everybody just takes everybody else's stuff, you know? It's like a frat house where you just walk into somebody else's room and say, I need your sweatshirt, I need your golf clubs, I need your, you know, CD, whatever. You know, you just say, everybody takes everybody else's stuff. So they come take the Mississippi State AD, and they trapdoor Harsin today. And this is the best thing as far as timing. Auburn is playing Mississippi State this weekend in football. Could you make it any more awkward? Couldn't you have waited 1 week to steal their AD? Did you have to do it the week you're playing them?
Yeah.
Now, John Cohen's like, got to get on a plane and go to the Bahamas all week and be like, I just can't. I got to get away from this. I'll report to work on Monday, but I cannot be around this game or either school. Let me out of here. So there's that. There is all the money that Dan laid out that they are just throwing around, all the money they're going to have to throw around for the new coach, who could perhaps be Lane Kiffin. Speaking of SEC West teams just going and taking each other's stuff. So what
if you end up, rival of Mississippi State.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yep. What if you take the AD from Mississippi State, the head coach from Mississippi, have them link arms with the craziest ass boosters in the SEC, in the nation, and just say, we're going to go buy a national title. Let's go. Auburn football right there, baby.
I think it's the plan.
Yeah.
The plan and the plane.
I've heard worse plans. That's a better plan than, like, hey, I hope this guy from Boise State will work out. He did okay.
I'm not saying that was a good hire by any means.
No, and they were doomed when they hired Harsin because half the boosters wanted Kevin Steele, who they just loved.
Right.
Kevin Steele is the SEC hero of all heroes. Yeah. He basically got Brian Harsin fired by not getting the job. Then remember he went to Tennessee and was the interim coach for like 2 weeks and made $1 million.
Yeah. Kevin Steele is the 21st century Brother Oliver. If you remember him, Bill Brother Oliver was the booster hero defensive coordinator back then, who they wanted to get rid of Terry Bowden to elevate him. It's the same thing. Cycle. Just keeps repeating.
40 years. It's been happening for 40 years there, basically.
So in the past 30 seasons, okay, Auburn has had three perfect seasons. It won a national title. It reached the title game another time. It's won the SEC three times. It reached Atlanta six times. And it once defeated Alabama six consecutive years.
Yep.
It also ran all five of the coaches who did that out of town in bitter and controversial fashions. But then welcomed one back and made him the U.S. Senator.
Can't make it up. Really can't make it
up. This is fantastic.
It is. It is. SEC football through and through there on the plains. Just means
if,
more.
If
Dan.
You had one guy do that for the 30 years, right? They're naming the stadium after him.
Yeah, right.
Instead, they fired all those dudes. Not only fired them, tried to backdoor them with like Bobby Petrino.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
All right. Candidates. Does the Lane train do this? That's look, to me, if Lane wants it, it's going to be his. He's killing it at Ole Miss. Ross, you did a ton of work, and I'll ask you about this. He was complaining about the NIL collective up there. Well, they got him one. Program's rolling, but has he kind of maxed out what you could do at Ole Miss and is looking and saying, I'm going to do this? Kiffin, crazy doesn't scare him.
No.
Crazy attracts him.
No, so. And I don't know that Nick Saban in coaching in the same state as Nick Saban scares him either.
No. Nope.
You know, it's just a question everybody wants answered. Is Lane, does he see the benefits in making this move? Is this more than a lateral move? I mean, we've seen the move happen before. You know, a certain current U.S. senator carried out in the old pine box from Oxford to Auburn. So it's happened before. You know, things have changed a little bit. You know, Lane was pretty movable. I think it was widely known last year. I think there was, interest from his camp in Miami, Florida, and LSU maybe. This year feels a little different. He settled in a little more. You know, I think his daughter's now living with him up there. His son is visiting a lot and might be living with him at some point. He's got the NIL thing going. He's obviously got the team going well. So you wonder if he would leave for a chance to coach at a school, just like John Cohen did leaving Mississippi State, to make a move out of the state of Mississippi, which for several reasons, and as a Mississippi Coast guy, I feel like I could say, I mean, there are drawbacks to living in that state, and to go to a place that with more resources, plain and simple. And I think the past should be an indicator of things. You know, you just said it, Dan. Auburn has competed for two national titles in whatever the last 12 years, right? 12 years. And has gone, you know, three undefeated seasons, the last 25 or 30. You know, Ole Miss hasn't competed for a national championship in 60 something, 70, whatever years. So, clearly, if he sees the benefit, if he wants to win a national championship and he doesn't think that he can do it at Ole Miss, certainly Auburn has proven there you can do it there.
Yeah, it's almost too perfect a match, really, you know, because Kiffin not only doesn't mind drama, he cultivates it and helps exacerbate drama, and there's plenty of it there. I'm sure he feels like if he just gets the right boosters on his side, everything would be fine, which it would be until all of a sudden you lose a game to Arkansas and one to Mississippi State, and then everybody's up your ass. But it would be kind of perfect for Auburn to hire a guy who this would be his sixth head coaching job at age 47. All right? Raiders, Tennessee, USC, Florida Atlantic, Mississippi, and then Auburn would be number six. Maybe he would finally stay someplace for, I don't know, more than 3 years, but who the hell knows? Lane the Drifter meets Auburn Crazy. It's a match made in psycho heaven.
I think when Lane went to Mississippi, I compared him to like,
oh yes, you did.
Like a broke both, like a marriage between two, like thrice divorced, broken down, like people at the bar.
I'll tell you exactly what this was actually maybe your finest, podcast riff was. Yeah, he was the three-time divorced guy who goes to Vegas and falls in love with the stripper and marries the broken-down stripper that's going to take his money. Yes, that was your comparison.
Yeah, yeah, well, it worked out. That's the thing. You got to give love a chance.
You do.
You got to give love a chance. You know, Auburn, and I think it's confusing a lot. Why is Auburn do better than Mississippi, right? Well, there's more. You're closer to good players. That's really it. Alabama, the state of Alabama, now this is a bumper crop this year, but 10 of the top, 12 of the top 100 players on Rivals are from the state of Alabama. And Auburn has commitments from zero of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, Alabama is going to dominate recruiting, but they've got five and they'll probably end up with like seven or eight, but they can't get them all. And, you know, this is also a holiday today. It's Nick Saban's birthday. And it's his 71st birthday. And we hope Coach Saban coaches for a long, long time. But he's 71 years old.
Right.
So at some point, he's not going to be over there running everything. And Alabama's been known to screw it all up, too.
Sure.
They look like the picture of perfection, but, you know, anything's possible. So there's a little, you know, maybe there's a little, you got a shot in a couple of years. Who knows? But Auburn, there's a ton of players in the state of Alabama. You should be able to get some. You're right across the, you know, right near South Georgia and you know, a ton of players in South Georgia. You can get to the Panhandle very easily. And you're like an hour and a half from like downtown Atlanta. But parts of Atlanta, you can get players. So you're just a little bit better set up. The stadium's incredible. It's a nice little pretty town. And I just think they can do really well there. So maybe that's enough. But Ole Miss has closed that gap a little bit in facilities and a lot of different things.
Well, here's the other thing, too. The immediacy with which it came out that Lane Kiffin could be the top target for Auburn says that's more boosters running their mouths.
Yep.
And let's think about it. If you want to have an ounce of common sense, if you're a booster, maybe let Lane lie low. It's October still. He's got a team that's in the playoff hunt. He's got a team that's still competing for the SEC championship. And now you're going to go running and telling everybody, yeah, we're going to go hire Lane Kiffin. Well, great. You've just created a disaster for Lane Kiffin for the next month.
And I don't know if that's boosters or just people. I mean, it's so obvious. I'm sure they're yapping too.
Well, I wonder what the new athletic director thinks. You know, I mean, is he going to have – they were selling during the search when they interviewed all these ADs. They interviewed a few Power 5 ADs, a group of 5 ADs. They probably, I don't know, interviewed – seems like at least 6 to 8 or so. They were selling, hey, this is when Auburn changes and the AD is going to hire the football coach and have authority over his department. And so you wonder, you know, sure. John Cohen is a former baseball coach. He is pretty fiery, passionate. You know, he's pretty meticulous and organized and all this stuff. Like he's I don't think he's not one of those that's going to just kind of like sit back. And so I'm fascinated to see how this is all going to work and if he's going to have, how much authority is he going to have and how much is he going to lead this search? Because I don't know how he feels about Lane Kiffin or any of the other names mentioned. You know, we Hugh Freeze obviously is a name that's linked to that job, was linked to it 2 years ago. I think part of the reason he maybe didn't get the job 2 years ago is because it wasn't, he hadn't done his time, so to speak, from the issues at Ole Miss, especially. I know, Dan, that was maybe a poor choice of words. But, you know, I think from the league's perspective, we all know what happened when Gus, you know, tried to hire Hugh Freeze in maybe 17, 18, whenever it was. And, you know, it was somewhat frowned upon by the office in Birmingham. So you would think that enough years have passed, but I don't know how. You know, again, I don't know who's making the hire and if it is John Cohen, how he really feels about these candidates. Because in the past, when he's done coaching searches, you hired Joe Moorhead and then you hired Mike Leach. They were pretty intense searches. And, you know, oddly enough, he was a baseball coach at Mississippi State when they hired Dan Mullen. And Greg Byrne was the AD and Scott Strickland was the deputy. And Scott and Greg invited John along for the ride. And so he was in the room when they interviewed Dan Mullen. So he's been a part of a lot of these searches, a lot of successful searches. And I don't know, it strikes me as somebody that if he has full control, he's not going to just, you know, interview one guy.
Well, you can have, they had full control when they hired Brian Harsin, and you're out in a year. I mean, like, that's a, you can.
That's the thing. Yeah. They reluctantly gave Alan Green and the president the reins for that one. And look how that turned out.
Yeah. And a lot of people during that one, a lot of people, you know, turned down the job, right? I mean, they were down the list. I don't know that anybody's ever said that publicly, but I mean, Brent Venables was interviewed and Billy Napier was interviewed. And, you know, you always dance between what's an offer, what's not an offer of a coach got offered. You know, you always hear the, there wasn't nobody an offer, offered, right? Offer released until you accept there's not an offer. But those coaches were, I think, Auburn was pretty interested in them. Let's say that. And they stepped away from that search for reasons that we've discussed on this podcast, all the same issues, you know,
all the same stuff. Yeah. All right. So Hugh Freeze is 7-1 at Liberty.
Yeah. After losing like a superstar quarterback.
Yeah.
Third string quarterback, I believe.
Yeah.
No question. The guy can coach.
Yeah.
I think if there is a penance for the, you know, whatever he was doing while he was down and, you know, whatever his antics, I could care less about that. That's between him and his wife. I always took a great issue with him. And this is to go back to Tom Mars, is that the reason we ever found out that he was called, that his cell phone had an escort's phone number on it, was because he was saying that all of the NCAA violations that were coming were going to be applied to Houston Nutt.
Yep. Yep.
And that was not true. Mm-hmm. But he lied to his team, his team's parents, recruits, and their parents, sat in living rooms and flat out lied to them and put everything on Houston Nutt. Also, they'd continue to sign with the school. I found that to be completely ethically bankrupt and a sign of a lousy person. Mm-hmm. I could care less about the other stuff. Now, Tom Mars defending Houston Nutt just said, stop saying it and apologize. They wouldn't. They kept doubling down until Tom Mars went through every last scrap of information he could and busted Hugh Freeze.
It was so avoidable. It was incredibly so avoidable.
Oh, yeah.
And just a whole avoidable collapse of a coach, just completely avoidable. And then, you know, and I've heard stories where they're going through the records before they release them, because they can go through and they can, you know, mark out, what's the word I'm looking for, guys? They can,
redact it. They can redact
number, you know, certain number, redact things that are linked to recruits and personal stuff. Again, personal stuff they could redact and it was overlooked. It wasn't redacted.
He would also know that he had made the call.
You think so? Yeah.
You'd think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
you know, but
the, just the stuff flat when you're lying to your own players and their parents.
Yeah. Purely, you know, to sign.
That's
sign
the
players.
Part that if I was hiring him, I'd go, who is this guy?
Mm-hmm.
Not the other stuff. So, but that is where we're at. But I don't think the Auburn fans care. I don't think most college football fans care, because the guy has got an exciting offense. And if you can't get Lane Kiffin, let's get Hugh Freeze. So, would Auburn take him, and would he go with it? Yes, and yes. I think he'd crawl there.
Oh, he would absolutely crawl.
My
conjecture, and this is conjecture, is he just agreed last week to a big new contract extension at Liberty. And I'm wondering if he knew that he wasn't going to be in the mix at Auburn, whether it was going to be Kiff or it was going to be somebody else, but it wasn't going to be him. And it's like, okay, now's the time to re-up. And again, he can still get out of it, I'm sure. If Auburn decides they want him tomorrow.
He's a man who values commitment, Pat.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't imagine he'd leave Liberty now.
No. If Auburn decides they want him tomorrow, he can go. But if you know you're not going to get the job, then you might as well cozy up to what you got. And, you know, it's just actually a thought that he and Lane Kiffin have the same agent. So he might have some information.
That's a good point.
True.
You know.
Then they beat BYU. So, well, we will see. We will see what's next for him. All right. If he's not it or whatever, Deion Sanders. Coach Prime. It's got Jackson State headed for the first undefeated season in school history. He's regularly defeating not just FCS teams, but or FBS teams, I'm sorry, but Power Five teams for recruits. He's a force of nature. They did a 60 Minutes piece on him. They got game day there. He got the number one recruit in the country out of Atlanta.
Had there may be no cover. More important SI, than more important
got
than
the
game
SI
day
cover.
60 Minutes.
I mean, he's a force of nature in Atlanta. He would be an incredible opportunity there. Does Auburn fit him? It's a small town, rural. I don't know. Does he need a bigger city, a bigger community? I know Jackson, Mississippi doesn't seem like a big city, but it's a lot bigger than Auburn, Alabama.
Bigger and diverse. And
bigger and diverse. Yeah. And what, how does he handle the boosters? Now, I can only imagine the golf cart they will buy this man.
How do the boosters handle him? How does an AD handle him? Right. I think we talked about that on the pod a month or two ago when early in the season, but yeah, that one just, you know, it just doesn't seem to fit for me. I don't know. It just doesn't seem to fit. There are a lot of other places out there that I think Dion kind of shtick would fit a lot better than a small SEC college town. I don't necessarily see it. And I think for Auburn's perspective too, it's you know, it's still a risk. I mean, Auburn's a good enough job, probably the best job open this cycle, arguably, that they really don't need to take that big of a risk to hire someone who's, you know, first time really college coaching experience is in the SWAC. And although they're doing great things, there's a lot more in the pool, right? More experienced guys in the pool on the higher level of coaching with much more coaching experience, the guys that we talked about. So that one just, I don't know, doesn't ring for me.
If it doesn't ring for Ross, it doesn't ring for me either. I trust his insight on this one. He's spent a lot more time in Mississippi, covered Dion, and knows the area. So I find Dion completely fascinating and intriguing, and I hope he does get a big job because I think it'll be a lot of fun, and I think he'd do well. But I agree, like the town of Auburn, Alabama, and Dion is not necessarily, I think, a great fit.
Yeah, it's fit. I think Dion would kill it there.
Yeah.
It's but like, you know, the Aflac commercials would get really cool.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Then you got Auburn against Alabama.
That's right.
Yeah. I tell you what, if he gets an SEC, like if he took this job, I think it's all the other stuff we talked about just isn't going to work. But let me tell you, if there's 12 top 100 players in the state of Alabama and Coach Prime is at Auburn.
Yeah.
Holy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 It's going to be.
He can get players at Jackson State. You know, he can get.
He's landing the number one recruit in the country to Jackson State. Yeah.
I mean, Jackson State, when he got there, as he was recruiting these kids, their team room was a small concrete floored room with metal folding chairs. And he got, you know, players there. So if he can get them there. Yeah, he can get him anywhere. The interesting thing, you know, what now that Brian Harsin is out, you know, West Coast guy Brian Harsin, there's one job open right now on the West Coast, obviously in Phoenix. And we talked how Dion kind of all the ones open, kind of fits that one a little more.
Like
big metro area, kind of fun place. You could see his shit kind of working there. But you wonder now if Brian Harsin would be a name out there
right at
Arizona State.
I just think I think Coach Prime in the Deep South is a really good recruiter, but I do love him at Arizona State too.
Yeah,
go ahead, Pat.
I was just going to say, can we pour one out for Mississippi State in particular? I mean, they think that there are now going to be there's three other SEC schools that have their athletic directors. And Ross is pouring one out right now out of a Basil Hayden bourbon bottle. At least he's pouring
the
good
sound
stuff tonight.
The sound's getting through there. The Basil Hayden. Yes, a third straight Mississippi State athletic director has left the school. Back-to-back state alums have left the school for SEC competitors. Scott Strickland went to Florida, obviously Cohen going to Auburn, and before Strickland, of course, Byrne went to Arizona, but then ended up at Alabama. You know, I wrote a little bit about this on Monday, but, you know, state, I just don't think people understand how difficult it can be living and working and trying to compete in Mississippi with others that are not in Mississippi. And it just can be difficult in an array of things. And it's too much to list here, but, you know, getting staff to come live in Starkville or you know, even Oxford, but we're talking about Mississippi State right now, you know, getting staff to come there and live there, getting more than 4 years on a coaching contract, right? Not allowed in the state, more than 4 years. You know, just the overall resources, right? They're behind in they've done a good job with facilities there. They've actually got incredible facilities, right? They've done a good job with that the last few years. And they do a lot more with less. They've done that. But, you know, this NIL game, it's, you know, I think they're behind. And, you know, how far are they behind, I don't know, because it's hard to believe any of these numbers that you hear with NIL, but they're behind. And I think, you know, you got back-to-back state alums, you know, Scott from Mississippi and John just from nearby Tuscaloosa, grew up loving Mississippi State. I mean, you know, John played for Mississippi State, played baseball, coached the baseball team there. I mean, there's a lot of like love and passion for Mississippi State in the state of Mississippi from those two guys. And that should tell you how difficult it is because they're both competitive. They both want to win. And it's just difficult in that state. And that's unfortunate. But yes, pour one out for the Bulldogs.
I've always thought that like they're just the school's just surrounded.
Yeah.
Like Ole Miss dominates sort of the political class and a lot of the lawyers and the old money probably have more fans. I'm sure they have more fans. But like you go to the southern part of the state, right, Ross? Like there's a lot of LSU fans down there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's split a lot. And you have,
and there's a lot of Alabama fans around there.
Yeah. Right. And you have, I think it's 7 or 8 D1 teams in the state. Obviously, 3 in FBS and in the coast, you know, where I'm from. It gets a different place when you get north of maybe I-10.
Jackson.
Certainly Hattiesburg area. Like it's a different place. And so the South Mississippi. You know, LSU fans. Yeah. They're Auburn fans. There's a lot of Auburn fans actually in South Mississippi. You know, it's Southern Miss obviously has a lot of fans.
Yeah,
in South
Southern
Mississippi.
Miss has followers. Jackson State. They get 50,000 a game.
Jackson
right,
State.
Right. The state is split up. You know, it's not like in Arkansas. It's not like an LSU. And so not only is the state split up, but it's a tiny state of 2.9 million people. Talked about why Auburn's a better job, and I agreed with Dan. Obviously, Auburn is closer to, you know, talent and all that. But I think one of the big things is the people, right? Alabama's twice as much population as the state of Mississippi. It just, that breeds more, you know, corporations, more, just more money in general. There's just more, you know, more money flowing through things. And that's a big part of it is the state is split up for so many colleges, and it's such a small state to begin with. So they don't have the advantage of like in Arkansas, which this is the big boy there, or even the LSU, where it's the big boy. And you could say the same for some other states like Alabama and Georgia, but their population is so much larger, right? It just is.
All right, let's do quickly a lightning round, if you will.
Yep.
If one of the names we did not mention, who would you say is a possibility here? Each guy gets one pick. Pat, you can start.
Out of names we did not mention.
Yeah, not Freeze, Lane, or Coach Prime. Who would you we're assuming we didn't really talk about Coach Leach, but I'm assuming he's not coming.
No, I don't think he's coming.
But anybody else other than that?
Holy moly.
Ross, you start.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't mention Matt Rhule.
Just throw a name out there.
Matt Rhule is somebody that, you know, I don't know if he wants to get back in immediately. I don't know if he wants to deal with the Auburn situation. And then I would say, you know, one to that, I would say Jeff Grimes, the offensive coordinator at Baylor. He's got a lot of people who like. He's been at Auburn before. He's as a coach, pretty successful offense at Baylor. There's a lot of people at Auburn who like him too.
If you want an offensive coordinator who's got some SEC chops and is doing a great job right now, Todd Monken,
yeah,
Georgia. Mm-hmm. You know, their offense is really taking on a new aura of creativity and explosiveness. And, you know, again, SEC, just go run around stealing each other's stuff. We'll go, yep, go get one of your rivals' offensive coordinator.
Bobby Petrino. Let's bring it. Let's make it happen.
There we go. There we go.
Missouri State.
I mean, it would not shock me if Bobby Petrino is like driving through the night right now to Auburn just to like lay down on the lawn out there and announce his candidate.
I think Todd Monken has a real chance here. I think that's a real possibility, you know. And there is Kevin Steele. He's down in Miami. Now, they're not doing really well.
Always Kevin Steele.
But always. There's always Kevin Steele. The whole thing. All right. So that is our emergency pod. We'll be back tomorrow. We're going to tape real late after the rankings, so we'll be back for you probably Wednesday morning with the look at the first inaugural college football playoff rankings. After that show, we'll discuss that, break it all down, and a huge weekend. But we had so much. We got brawls in Auburn. We got to make our own show. So we appreciate you guys taking an extra show and listening. And continue to subscribe. Tell your friends about us. So show keeps surging, and we love doing it. So thank you to everyone, and talk to you later.